Welcome to Continued Success. I am Justin Clue, and with me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports.
Hello, Justin. How are you?
Pretty well, pretty relaxed, pretty quiet week for our Phillies. And by that, I mean they didn't do anything really crazy, and no one nearby them did anything to make them look worse this week. I don't know, right?
No. I mean, there was the typical article from someone at The Athletic or wherever, like, saying in whatever article they're writing, hey, the Phillies are in a really shitty situation. It's bad, and they don't seem to care. Because I know Ken Rosenthal and Jason Stark wrote a comprehensive breakdown of, you know, every candidate that it could possibly be, for the most part. And, I mean, the theme throughout was, why would anyone want this job?
It's true. And I think that goes for a lot of the people that are being named. That's what's been interesting. And that's what we're going to talk about today. The opening in the Phillies' key areas, whether that, you know, starts with the president of baseball operations or that starts with the general manager position, which currently Ned Rice is filling in an interim capacity. But the names that
no one has seen nor heard from him.
No, the names that have come up have been exactly the kind of people I would think would not be interested, given that there may be better situations available across the league. Yeah, I mean, it's no secret the Phillies have these openings. They seem to be startled into doing something thanks to all the action elsewhere in the league. Although maybe, hey, I also have a feeling maybe they weren't doing like anything on the surface, but like maybe they were sort of conducting low-key searches behind the curtain, and so that like when people complain, they can come back later and be like, we were doing our job, we just can't tell you everything, blah blah. But I don't know, I think it's a pretty safe assumption that it's just nothing going on there. But yeah, they did mention preliminary stuff had been going on, potential candidates had been named. We received word that the Phillies want someone to bring, quote, instant credibility to the president of baseball operations position, which sounds a lot like the managerial search they embarked on a year ago.
Indeed.
I don't know if they actually said that at the time, but when you look at the names that were circulating the Phillies at that point in Dusty Baker, Buck Showalter, and of course Joe Girardi, who ultimately got the job, and those were a response to coming from a first-time manager. You know, it's the same kind of situation. They're like, well, we tried something, it didn't work, and now we need somebody in here who knows what they're doing. So what do you think it means that the Phillies have taken these big swings that turn into big misses and then have to scramble to replace them with people everyone has actually, you know, like heard of and is familiar with their body of work?
I mean, everyone get ready. I'm going to say something positive about the Phillies here. I think it's fine that they take swings and misses. I mean, it sucks. I mean, they're behind and the future doesn't look great, but they did take a big swing twice and they missed, and that sucks. But like, if I'm looking at it from just like a pure decision perspective, like, I don't think it was bad, you know, for them to do that. I'm glad they went in the opposite direction. They went way too hard. Way, way, way too hard. So when now they're backpedaling, and, you know, we have to look at the decisions in that light, too.
When you say two big swings, do you mean both Gabe Kapler and Matt Klentak?
Yeah.
Okay. See, I consider it one swing in that they were hiring an all-new, I'm sick of using the word regime. It doesn't even seem, you know, whatever. But anyway, you know what I mean? Like a whole new
administration.
Chain of command, you know? Like and I think that they were hiring people all, you know, in this, who subscribe to the same philosophies as we know. And so I consider it like, I look at them more as one amorphous swing in that, Gabe, you know, Andy McPhail gets hired. He hires Matt Klentak. Matt Klentak hires Gabe Kapler. Everybody's got the guy they want in the position. And, you know, like you said, we've seen other teams do this. We've seen other teams bring in first timers, guys with big ideas, guys with the same idea, you know, that is all across baseball at this point, and a more analytics, advanced statistics leveraging approach. And the Phillies were focusing on that because they had lagged so far behind for so long. And yeah, I think we've seen that work with other teams. With the Phillies, it just didn't. And I don't know, maybe you can chalk that up to, okay, we know what this guy's interested in, but we're not really focusing on him as a person. So, you know, I talked a lot, I think, in our last episode about how poor communication has been, even when you hire somebody like Gabe Kapler, who was supposed to be such a great communicator. Like him specifically was a bad communicator, like to the public and at some cases in within the clubhouse as well, we saw. So, yeah, I agree with you that taking a big swing like that is a good idea, but clearly they went with the wrong specific parts. And,
yeah, I'm desperate to look at it from a positive perspective, because if you look too deep, you have to wonder if the Phillies were always going to do the opposite of what they were going to do. If this was always the road that they were going to travel, you know, some teams get it right and some teams get it wrong. Were the Phillies always destined to be wrong because of who's in charge?
You're right. That is dangerous. Thank you.
Yeah. That's what I just,
I thought you were going to say, were the Phillies always destined to get it wrong because Phillies, like there's just some
also
kind of
that,
aura.
I mean, that's essentially what it is, like because of who is in charge. And of course, John Middleton is the one who is in charge, and like this is just how the Phillies have been always. But even like if we don't go that far back and just think about, you know, even in the shorter term, it's still depressing.
Well, the names we've heard currently to potentially fill baseball ops position is they're all pretty familiar. Brian Sabian, formerly of the Giants, was named. Dave Dombrowski, formerly of the Red Sox, right? The Red Sox? Yeah.
He is not interested.
No. And that's the thing. These are names just being listed. You're not necessarily sure of what the candidate's interest even is. Eric Neander, currently with the Rays. He's from a, I guess, lower, different generation from the other two guys mentioned. He's only 37 years old. He's obviously been a big part of the Rays' success, but he has been said, according to Ken Rosenthal, quote, almost certainly not leaving Tampa. Neander was named Executive of the Year in 2019 because the Rays had 96 wins on a payroll that was under $70 million. Seems like exactly the kind of guy the Phillies would want to bring on right now, so too bad. And, of course, Michael Hill has been a name, I think, that's been mentioned probably the most out of this group. He was the president of baseball ops for the Marlins. He has the blessing of one anonymous executive, according to Jim Salisbury. According to this person, Hill is a, quote, high-integrity guy who, quote, ran great meetings. He comes from I know, that cracked me up, too. He comes from, he's, like, passing out waters to everybody, like, giving people shoulder rubs. He comes from player development, not analytics, and is interested in hearing every opinion in the room. This is from Salisbury. During his time in Miami, Hill was charged with building teams and tearing them down for financial reasons. But, of course, in Philadelphia, hopefully he'd get the chance to build a team and watch it win. So you think maybe that would have some appeal to him. But, again, what the Phillies have now wouldn't get him there. Like what they're doing, you know, the talent they have now wouldn't get them there. And it's pretty clear that in the immediate future, they don't seem very eager to spend a lot of money. I don't know. I mean, is Hill a name that excites you? Do any of these guys excite you?
I mean, of the group, I'd say the one that excites me and the one that might actually be available would be Hill, Michael Hill. I mean, he isn't a big glamour name. I feel like the Phillies wouldn't have to dole out an excessive amount of money for him. And he might want to come back into baseball, given how unceremoniously he was dumped by the Marlins. So,
yeah, that's very true. It'd be nice to get somebody who was... It'd be nice to get somebody from another team who is motivated to help your team beat other teams. It feels like the Phillies have seen a lot of people leave them and go to other teams and help them beat the Phillies.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to get somebody, you know, be on the other side of that dynamic, I guess, for once. John Middleton has made it clear that someone in player development and evaluation with that in their background would be great, as opposed to just like Ivy League analytics guy, since the Phillies really could, you know, do better there in player development and evaluation.
Yeah, it's like John Middleton realized that, you know, it's not hard to have an analytics department, and it's not hard to have a smart analytics department. You just have to hire a lot of people and have some idea what you're doing. You don't need a general manager who is well-versed in that to, you know, to do this. You don't need a... What you do need is a good player development guy always. Like, yeah. You can get a good analytics department, but if the guy in charge is not familiar with player development, you have the Phillies is what you have.
So that kind of brings us to what we're going to talk about today. The biggest name that's come up, obviously, the biggest name that's circulated, I don't think this is being talked about in a very serious capacity, just kind of a theoretical one. Perhaps there's been some alignment narratively that has started a few rumors. Certainly people's fantasies are being stirred to life here. But one of the names that most people are talking about is Theo Epstein. Now, Epstein, do you think Theo Epstein is the most famous executive in Major League Baseball history?
Yes, I do. Probably. Yeah. Him or Billy Beane, because there's like a whole, book and a movie made after him. But like, what's fascinating is that no one cares about him. He didn't win a World Series, and now he gets, I think he's going into like venture capitalism or some stupid crap.
That's really interesting that Billy Beane was the one that Michael Lewis did the book with, because Epstein was doing stuff like this at the time as well. We're going to get into this a little bit, mm-hmm. but his team's, you know, wound up winning. You know, so that is interesting. But yeah, looking over this, it's like, yeah, he's definitely up there as far as the most famous executive. Executives aren't always necessarily famous anyway. But he's also, there's just no getting around the legend that surrounds Epstein, and that he took two of the biggest, most formidable curses in the history of baseball, and he broke both of them in a single career. So it is very interesting to think what he would do next, having, of course, led the Red Sox to two World Series titles, led the Cubs to a World Series title, gotten to the postseason countless times. Obviously, just on those stats alone, thinking of him taking hold of this Phillies front office and bringing some kind of stability and doing what he does, which, again, we're going to talk about here, supplying stronger infrastructure to a franchise would be massively appealing and pretty exciting to consider. But I was kind of thinking about this, and the more I thought about it, and the more I wanted to do an episode on Theo Epstein, was because Epstein's teams, the teams he's most associated with, are kind of, he as a GM has been pretty outside of the Phillies orbit since he's come on the league, since he's been a figure in baseball. Obviously in Boston, Phillies didn't interact with him too much. And out in Chicago, you know, he's never been in the Phillies division. The Phillies have never been that strong. I mean, I guess he was in the postseason when the Phillies were still good, but they didn't run into the Red Sox when he was over there. And by the time he was leading the Cubs, the Phillies weren't in the postseason really anymore.
No, I mean, the only time that, you know, the only significant games really were the Cole Hamels no hitter. That's it. I think that's the most significant game that they have played against each other.
Yeah. So he's kind of, other than the broadest definitions of who he is and what he's done, I feel like we as Phillies people may not really even know him that well, really, really understand what he would do for a franchise other than, you know, make it better, which, again, fascinates me because there's so much, and we have learned this specifically, there's so much that can go wrong. You can make the right decisions and they just can't work and they just won't work out. Sometimes it rains on your wedding day, you know, stuff like that, that like we know how many factors go into this process, how many moving parts can go into this process of building a good team, even like a functional team, let alone a championship team, let alone a dynasty, let alone a team that's set up to win now and in the years to come and has a strong farm system. Like, we know how difficult that is because of how few times the Phillies feel like they've been in that position. And like I said, a lot of moving parts, any one of those parts breaks and sometimes the whole thing falls apart. Yet somehow Epstein has managed to get not only like the talent evaluation right, but the timing right. He was on the cusp of analytics. He read Bill James' abstract in fourth grade.
Oh, like, God.
This guy,
God,
I mean,
nerdlinger, man.
He's been like on top of it for so long that, you know, I hate giving glowing reviews to anybody, and I definitely don't. It's not like I'm giving him 100% here. We're going to talk about some things, but like for the most part, it's incredible to me to see a GM like that out there, to see an executive out there like that who can so kind of seamlessly capture the success that's expected of him and keep those expectations high for so long. So I don't know. I mean, do you feel like you've had anything other than a pretty broad view of Theo Epstein since he's come on the scene?
I mean, I think, you know, a broad view. I mean, we write about baseball. We pay attention about baseball. We probably know a little bit more than the average fan. But, you know, he's just been sort of this legend who is leading other teams to glory.
Yeah. So a Yale man, he was born a few days after Christmas in 1973. Theo Epstein got to where he is the old-fashioned way, literally, by writing letters to a bunch of Major League Baseball teams. I believe he was still in college. And one of them, the Orioles, got back to him. What a huge bummer. But still, he went to the Orioles. He was an intern there for three different summers. They had a Yale guy as head of personnel back then, and answering letters was apparently part of his job. And because there is no stronger bond than two white dudes who don't know
Yale,
each other,
honestly.
But went to the same school in Massachusetts, Epstein was
Yale
in.
Yale is in Connecticut.
Yale is in Connecticut.
Yale,
that's right.
I worked there for like almost a decade.
I can't. Well, I'm not challenging you.
Well, no, but I'm like, we've been friends for a long time. Do you not? I lived there for so long.
Oh, I don't. I think of the Ivy League as a cluster, like a cul-de-sac of old buildings in Massachusetts. That is, like,
it is for the most
where
part
where it lives in my brain. All right, so let's say New England. but I'm sure it was a great letter, regardless of the inroads Epstein had for him already. You know, he has a big writing family. I think his father oversees the creative writing program at Boston University.
Wow.
As everyone, I think, it's become more common knowledge now. His grandfather and great uncle wrote Casablanca. So, and his sister is a screenwriter. So a lot of writing goes into his family. And if you read his farewell letter that was published on The Athletic from the Cubs, as Theo Epstein recently stepped down to take a year off from his position as president of baseball ops with the Cubs, you would know that, yeah, this writing is one of his talents. So it's not surprising that by writing a letter, he got a door opened for him with a Major League Baseball team. And like I said, he interned with the Orioles for 3 years. As far as his name, Theo, Tom Verducci wrote in his book about the Cubs building a World Series winner. He was named Theo because he was conceived in Holland. Fun little information.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this cracked me up. They wanted a Dutch name, Verducci write. It was popular at the time, and it had the added benefit of being the name of Vincent van Gogh's younger brother.
So his name is just Theo? It's not short for Theodore?
What is the benefit of being named after Vincent van Gogh's not famous younger brother?
I don't. This is a real erudite family, man. I'm guessing. Like, listen, like the jobs that you said, like head of the creative writing program at Boston University, like, of course, this is something that is meaningful to these weirdos. I mean, listen, they can do them. It's all good. I have no ill will, but wow. What did Holland even have to do with this?
Well, he was conceived there.
I mean, but why should that matter? Like, what significance does that have other than... I'm just so confused.
I guess if you're naming a kid and you're trying to narrow it down and you're like, all right, well...
We don't care about anyone in our family.
they wanted a Dutch name because that's where he was conceived, and that was just where they went. I don't know. That's
a story that he knows. And yeah, I know. Told, like, wow.
That crossed my mind, too. Like,
this
oh, cool.
is, I feel like that the Epstein family might be an interesting family to have a meal with.
He's got a twin, too. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. He was born 60 seconds before his twin, Paul.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, this is like the non-evil Emmanuel family.
Epstein also got a law degree from the University of San Diego while he was the director of player development with the Padres. And that actually opened some doors for him. He was brought into more meetings that, like, you know, the front office was holding because his insight became more valuable as he expanded his skill set. Then in 2002, when he became GM of the Red Sox, They had their offices in a subterranean lair under Fenway Park. Did you know this?
No.
Yeah, they had this office, and like the only windows that Alex Speyer writes in his book, Homegrown, How the Red Sox Built a Champion from the Ground Up, he talks about this office being like a cluster of cubicles in this, like, I think largely cement kind of bunker. The only windows were like up near the top of the ceiling where you could see people's feet walking by. These guys were, they had hired like a lot of guys in like maybe their early 30s. To work in this front office at the beginning of this, you know, the beginning of this statistical revolution. And, things got pretty wacky down there, including one time where Epstein hit a golf ball with his driver that wound up bouncing off a pillar that he didn't intend to hit and flying into Ben Sherrington's office and hitting him in the face and drawing blood.
This is like the 1970s SNL of baseball, like all that shit that they got up to, you know, Garrett Morris free basing in, you know, and 30 Rock. Like, this is what this is like, only much nerdier.
Oh, yeah. It talks about them like throwing on boxing gloves and having boxing bouts.
Oh, my God.
In front of Sherrington's office.
These bros.
When Sherrington got hit.
Oh, damn.
I think he had been bending down so that like his face was in like the perfect spot to be struck by this ball. They thought he was like, he might have lost an eye initially, but he was okay. So yeah, Epstein's whole thing was when he was hired in 2002, after they had offered him the GM job, they had offered that GM job to both Billy Beane and JP Ricciardi.
Oh yeah.
So both of them turned it down, and both of them suggested that they hire Epstein.
No.
Which was interesting. So, but his whole thing was, like I said, it was infrastructure. He said to Alex Speyer for his book, "One of the points I wanted to be clear on was that we were really going to focus on building through young players, building through scouting, building through player development, and just as importantly, get away from the notion that we had to please the media in November and December, make a big splash, and build for the immediate future." He was very into the idea of like a machine that builds champions. They invested in a lot of picks outside of the top five rounds, they had the freedom to do so from ownership, stirring envy among other general managers. There was also that first year, I guess it was 2002. I forget why. There was like a bunch of compensation picks available across the league. It was it was a good time to be the kind of GM he wanted to be. I mean, just listening to that description, Liz, I hear GMs talk about their plans or their beliefs, and obviously they never get too specific. They rarely get too specific, especially at the beginning of their tenure. But like, when you hear somebody who's like, "Hi, I'm your new GM. We want to build through young players. We want to do a lot of scouting. We want better player development." Does that sound that ambitious? Does that really sound that crazy or new or different? Isn't that what a baseball development, you know, ops department should be doing?
I guess back then it had to have been a novel idea, or, you know, at least a novel idea to teams that hadn't been doing that.
But isn't every team scouting? Every team has young players. Every team has a farm system. Every team participates in the draft. Like, isn't it just saying, well, we're going to do that stuff well? But again, everyone is intending to do that stuff well. So, I mean, I guess, is he just not really specifically talking about what exactly they're going to do?
Yeah,
so,
I guess that must be it.
And when he says that we're not going to please the media in November, he's also saying like, hey, fans,
stop,
like,
spending, you know, we're not going to spend money. Get fucking used to it.
And that's tough to hear as fans, certainly. I would imagine, especially at the beginning before Epstein like has the reputation he has now. That's tough to hear. I mean, we're sitting here listening to the Phillies say that. I don't credit them with having as, you know, giant a plan as Epstein had at this point, but it's a bummer. You don't want to hear that. You're like, oh, so we're not going to make a big splash. But what he's saying is we're not adhering necessarily to this baseball calendar, to these informal rules that if you lose out on a couple of big free agents, you just didn't try hard enough, or, you know, that you're not going to be very good. And I think once this process got rolling, people saw the benefit of what he was saying initially. But at first it might've been hard to take, because he was basically saying, we're going to let these young players mature, and that can look like shit.
We're
going
to lose for a while. It's going to stink.
But that's how you build infrastructure. And, you know, if we just pause here and think about applying that idea to the Phillies right now, I don't know how you would get people excited about that. Like, you would get people, like, some people would be, some people who are always thinking about future value, which gets really frustrating. But, like, it's not like this team has been good and is now floundering. This team has been trying to pick itself up off the ground since 2012 and failed to do so. Like, almost starting over would be scary. So I don't know. I feel like you wouldn't, that's what we've been saying. Like, this team has resisted maybe firing people because they didn't want to look like they were starting over, or they didn't want to have to start over. This team, I don't think the Phillies would necessarily need to start. They need better infrastructure, but I mean, how do you start over as the Phillies right now?
I mean, I don't, you either do and you just bear the wrath of everyone, including the people on your team. Or, you know, you hire someone like Theo Epstein and he takes the job because it's a challenge, because it's different than what he would normally do. You know, it's not, it doesn't quite fit in, but the Phillies do need infrastructure. And at least Theo Epstein has the benefit of a semi-functional team, at least, you know, some good building blocks to add to. Like, essentially the Phillies need someone to do both. They need someone who can help them be at least at the base minimum competitive, which they've failed to do. You know, but they also need someone who can build all the stuff they don't have, you know, to fix all the reasons why they're in this spot right now. So it's like they need a huge overhaul, but they don't have the luxury of time, because they, at this point, they've gone at least partially in. They have to at least field a competitive team, which they haven't been doing, which is why everyone's so angry. If they'd made the playoffs this year, I think some of our criticism would have been blunted. I know it would have, you know, even though we know that they wouldn't have deserved to necessarily, finishing strong, you know, finishing on a winning streak would at least validate some of the things that, you know, we had hoped would happen this year. You know, if they'd broken off a big winning streak at the end of the season and made the playoffs, you know, which they hadn't managed to have any type of real winning streak this year.
It's like trying to build a skyscraper, but you can't bulldoze the playground that's already where you're trying to build. You know, like Bryce Harper's contract. You're not going to move that.
No.
And somebody, you know, somebody who's like rebuilding, their first thought is like, okay, how can we, you know, what are these big pieces that are on this team that are good players who make the team better? But at this point, it's easier to go back to the beginning and rebuild from there rather than build on top of the fragmented parts we still have. But in the case of Harper, you're not going to move him. And outside of him, with Real Muto gone and Gregorius gone, you still have Nola, you still have Wheeler. But, like, who else do you even... So I don't think the Phillies... I don't think whoever comes to the Phillies is blowing them up. I don't think that's where they are.
No, they can't do that. There's no way to blow the team up.
Right.
And they don't have enough to blow it up.
That's what I think would make it a different job than going to Boston and going to Chicago. Both were places that were like, we're done fucking around. We want to build a winner. We're willing to try. In Boston, it was like, we're willing to try this. And in Chicago, it was like, we're willing, you bring that success here, please. Like, you worked, this worked in a big, big market area with a ravenous fan base, with who hasn't won the World Series in a legendarily long time. So I think this would be a different situation, because the Phillies' last World Series wasn't a century ago. It was 12 years ago, which in the grand scheme of things isn't too long, but it's also too long for them not to have made the, not to have been back, I think, since then. So, well, no, they were back in 2009. But you know what I mean? For them to not be better now is still an issue. They should be, they feel like they should have gone through the cycle by now. So they are at a weird spot. So if anything, this could be viewed as a non-repetitive challenge for Epstein because of that. They're just at a, you know, you think about this as like a process. The Phillies are kind of like off to the side a little bit. They're a little off the map developmentally, because you can't really identify where they are in this process, just because simply it hasn't worked out the way that it's supposed to. Epstein, I feel like he was somewhat known for this quote. He used to talk about the apple, you know, that this quote he has, more bites from the young ripening apple, fewer bites from the older rotting apple. That sounds kind of pervy to me.
It sounds great. Wow. What a great and awesome way to think about human being players in a sport. To think about anybody who is over whatever age it is that he has in his head is an older, rotting apple that they should not spend a lot of money on. Because apparently there's no value at all in older players, and they actually will make you sick.
He could have just stopped at more bites of the young ripening apple. We know what he meant. Like, why did he have to say the older rotting part?
Oh, God. Because that's... Mr. I'm going to shoot golf in my office. A shocker.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, get into Epstein's tenure with the Red Sox and the Cubs and what he could potentially, if he were to show up with the Phillies, what he could potentially do for him. And we'll get to that right after this break. Well, Liz, the Red Sox and Theo Epstein won the 2004 World Series, of course. I had forgotten that he quit after 2004 in 2005. Because his heart just wasn't in it anymore. And he quit on Halloween, so he left Fenway Park in a gorilla suit to avoid being recognized. And the suit was auctioned off for $11,000, which was donated to the Jimmy Fund. Insanity! I completely forgot about
that
story.
Me too. Like, as I heard about that earlier this week, I'm like, holy crap, that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was a real thing that happened. And you know what? That's kind of epic.
Yeah,
like that's not a word I throw around often, but that's, you know, after you win a city's first, you know, World Series in, you know, 8 million years, you quit on Halloween and leave in a gorilla suit. Like that's movie shit.
Yeah, but they did manage to convince him to come back, and he won another World Series with Boston in 2007. But 3 years later, in 2010, he felt like the Red Sox had gotten, quote, too big, he said. They were always trying to win those 95 games a season. They were always expanding. They were always increasing revenue, always setting expectations sky high. And he tried to be honest with everybody in the fan base that he felt like 2010 had to be a bridge year, in which they paused, they developed some of their younger talent. They focused more on that rather than bringing in free agents and you know, trying to force their way into a playoff spot. He felt like, no, this is a year we need to stop. He called it a bridge year. I want to see the younger talent fully mature. And people didn't like that. Do you think a sentiment like that is better understood today, 10 years later, that honesty like that after Gabe Kapler and Andy McPhail's bullshit here in Philadelphia would almost be potentially appreciated by Phillies fans if we were told that, especially since the team had like achieved so much success already. And he was just like, look, I'm not saying we're not going to compete. We're going to be competitive, but our focus is going to be on developing our younger talent this year, just because we need a year to do that, to set up the future. Having already seen his resume, having already seen him lead the team to success, do you not trust him at this point, 10 years later, that that's going to work out for you in the end?
I mean, I think, yeah, we could trust it, but I also don't think, you know, Theo Epstein 10 years later would, I don't think any GM or president of baseball operations is that honest with their fan base anymore. Theo Epstein wasn't. He wasn't, I mean, the reason why he's leaving is because the Ricketts are about to force a rebuild.
Yeah.
That's why he's leaving. He didn't that.
No.
He didn't talk about why
that.
He's really leaving. And so I feel like that the honest, Theo Epstein is a younger Theo Epstein that no longer exists anymore.
He said, quote, when we won, our fan base grew, our revenues grew, the expectations to keep creating revenues grew, our expectations of winning 95 games and getting deep into playoffs grew every year, and it reached a point. One eye-opener is when we tried to have a little bit of a longer-term plan one year, and I remember trying to be transparent with the fan base and saying this is probably going to be a bridge year. We're going to try to compete but also get a little bit younger, and some of our prospects will need one more year to mature, and we're really looking forward to 2011. So, like I said, just to give you the direct quote, but as Verducci writes, it didn't go over well internally or externally. So, yeah, I think you're right that kind of honesty, you know, we tried that. Nobody liked it, even though it makes sense. I find it kind of refreshing, but I'd probably be right there with you if a GM was like, hey, just a heads up, might not be as dominant a year as we've become used to. And then you're just like, well, fine, I guess I just won't buy season tickets then. Yeah, it's a little frustrating, but I don't know. I guess just coming off this era where everybody at the Phillies coming off, still in the middle of an era in which everybody in the Phillies front office or ownership group thinks that they can talk to you like you're an idiot, like you haven't been watching baseball, that you haven't been watching modern baseball. I don't know. It just seems nice that he would be like, look, here's the deal. And this is the real deal, because clearly telling you this isn't in my best interest. So, you know, I'm being honest. But yeah, at the end of the day, it's not great news. By 2011, the Red Sox had made the postseason, I believe, in 7 of his 9 years with the team. He built consistent winners, and then he built another one in Chicago when he started there in 2011. Tom Ricketts, who you mentioned, Cubs owner, was said to have spoken to 20 different baseball executives about who to hire, and 19 of them said Theo Epstein, according to Verducci's book. He was looking for someone who understood analytics, player development, and had a winning track record. I don't know how many people like that even existed outside of Theo Epstein at that point. sabermetrically in tune, Joe Maddon's, sabermetrically skilled, I guess. Theo Epstein kind of, you know, embodies that. Joe Maddon, who became his manager in Chicago, said that Theo also has empathy, which is something people say when they're trying to give you reasons that they are not a sociopath. It is also something what he was trying to say was that sets him apart, is that when he talks to you, it doesn't feel sterile. And that
he's
when
not
he
a
is
robot, we promise.
He's able to use analytics without being consumed by them, even though he wants more information all the time. And the other factors we talk about in player evaluation continued to matter to him, Maddon said. You mentioned Moneyball earlier. Epstein did not like that Billy Beane worked with Michael Lewis on Moneyball. He and Beane had been friends because of their shared use of advanced statistics, but he felt like now everybody in the league would find out about what they were doing and want to do it, which they did.
Great job, everybody.
So this was interesting to me. There's Peter Gammons had a story in 1999 when Epstein was still with the Padres. He was an executive with the Padres at this point. And he's talking about, Gammons is talking about Oakland, and he was talking about at the time that some of the best offenses in the league were the Indians, Yankees, and Mets. And people were looking at why, and they saw that these were also teams that led in categories like most pitches seen per inning. And this kind of, I don't know if they were literally talking about sabermetrics at this point, 1999, but obviously, it's a little early, because this like statistics, advanced analytics debate really started, you know, I want to say more like 2009, 2010. That's when you're really in the thick of it, where you had all the what is it good for articles and, you know, old school versus new school and everything. So 1999 feels so early. And it's interesting because Epstein is quoted in this story. And as Gammons is talking about, like, you know, hey, these free swingers in the sport, they're learning that maybe it pays to be more patient, where having an at-bat that lasts forever used to be, like, you know, shrugged at. Gammons wrote that it works in Oakland because everyone in the organization is on the same page and open to new ideas. In some others, traditionalists scoff at the notion that there is a place for Bill James' disciples to merge their ideas with players. What was Ted Williams' book all about? Get a good pitch to hit, says Padres executive Theo Epstein. That's all this is about. Ted didn't need Bill James. The A's, Yankees, and Mets are just playing offense the way Ted tried to tell everyone to do it 50 years ago. It kind of sounded like he was maybe trying to throw people off his scent. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it sounded like he was, because he goes, Gammons goes right from saying, like, people are traditionalists scoff at the notion, and then goes into a quote from Epstein. It almost sounds like he's saying Epstein's a traditionalist, which he's definitely not. So that quote he gave him makes it sound like, I don't know, I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Does it sound like Epstein was like, hey, I don't want other people to think this is like going on. I don't want this to become a thing because it's the thing I'm trying to use to gain an advantage.
You don't give your secrets if you don't have to. I mean, yeah, I kind of love the idea that he was, you know, trying to throw people off the scent. You know, it's a very thoughtful person who will, it's not even... He's trying to throw people off the scent intentionally because he didn't have to give a comment. He didn't have to comment at all, but he chose to so he could intentionally throw people off the scent of what he's doing as if there are spies everywhere.
So the list of adjectives I put together to describe Theo Epstein are empathetic, aggressive, analytic, respected, and workaholic, though maybe not so much anymore since he's older than a lot of the the materials you consult for a story on his history, you know, in all these stories with the Red Sox, you know, he's in his early 30s and then he's in his early 40s with the Cubs and now he's 46. But at this point, Epstein checks a lot of the Phillies boxes, I feel like. But it's not like that's hard to figure out. He's Theo Epstein. You know, we talked about him being the most famous executive in baseball at the start of the episode. It's easy, you know, when you go to the top guy, he's the top guy because he checks everyone's boxes most of the time. It's not like he's hard to find. It's not like the Phillies had to unearth him. He is 1A. And probably the most successful GM, or probably the most successful executive of all time. He broke not one, but two of baseball's most legendary curses, like I said. And my point being, the Phillies going big here, potentially getting Theo Epstein to join their executive team, would help them. But also, like the hiring of Girardi, doesn't take a ton of insight. No. You know, like everybody knows who that is. The Phillies are buying a book everybody else has already read, a movie everyone else has already seen. I think it's indicative of this team's reputation for lagging behind that they'd reach for Theo Epstein in 2020 rather than 2002 when he went to the Red Sox. But that's neither here nor there at this point. I don't really care. Bringing in Epstein would bring stability and confidence to what has been a bumbling shit show as Middleton has tried to carry it out himself. Do you feel like after Boston and Chicago, potentially Philadelphia could be the perfect big market sad sack franchise for Epstein to complete a holy trinity of franchise rebuilds?
I think so. I have no bias whatsoever. And I think so for reasons that definitely aren't related to me wanting my favorite team to get their fucking shit together.
It has a lot of appeal. It does. But I think you start talking about the likelihood, and I'll be honest, the wind kind of went out of my sails. Not thinking not on Epstein, but just in the idea that it would happen. When he was hired by the Cubs, he still had a year left on his contract with the Red Sox, but things had changed between them. He broke that deal because he decided it just wasn't what he wanted anymore. He's capable of considering his own mortality in these decisions. In Boston, he actually attended a member of the organization's funeral, and they were being buried in a Red Sox casket. And he kind of like started reflecting on this, saying, you almost start to resent your legacy when it becomes something you're not fully invested in anymore. And he had started to feel a little more distant about the Red Sox. And he was just like, am I going to be buried in a Red Sox casket? If I'm here for much longer, that's going to be my identity. And he just decided that wasn't what he wanted his identity to be. And then even when he got to Chicago, he kind of made the comment that like, look, you know, 10 years max, and which is, you know, a very long time, certainly for a GM. These guys get shit canned after 4 years if they aren't putting it all together. So 10 years showing up and being like, I will be here 10 years and no more. It's not like a, you know, but it was also telling you this is how I view this, you know? And I believe it's been said by smarter people than me that like, it's kind of ideal to change things out like that after 10 years, regardless, because culturally things have just evolved around somebody anyway. So again, this is an older Epstein the Phillies would potentially be getting, which I don't think is super likely, but in theory, he was 46 years old. The Epstein described in the books by Alex Speyer, Tom Verducci, David Kaplan, John Frisella. There's like four different books written about Theo Epstein and the things he's done. That version of him is voracious and working constantly, but now he's stepping down. He's taking a year off. He is closer to 50 than 30. He's probably not hitting drives into his colleagues' eye sockets anymore. Maybe he's not as hungry to get involved. And, you know, he's kind of proven that what he thinks works more than once. Maybe a year off is exactly what he needs to retain that kind of interest. Maybe he's taking a year off for a reason. But here's the thing for me. They're not all hits. Not all of his moves are hits, but his misses have been swiftly forgotten due to the success he's achieved. My question is, when you really get down to it, since everybody's just doing an impression of what Theo Epstein does across the league now, which, by the way, after reading all this about Theo Epstein, Matt Klentak has never seemed more like Theo Epstein light.
Yeah.
Ever. Like, even just like, oh, Dartmouth instead of Yale, you know? He comes in, he tries to make a bunch of Epstein moves. He gets Jake Arrieta, like, runoff from Theo Epstein's plans and brings him in, and he's nowhere near as good a player as he was with the Cubs when Epstein got him. And that's my point, actually. My question is, how does Epstein know, because this has been the Phillies' problem, timing. How does Epstein know when it's the right time to trade an Andrew Cashner to trade a Ryan Dempster, to know that he's achieved enough success to be worth trading, but his drop-off is right around the corner, and it's time to cash in and get the players you actually want. How does he know it's the right time to acquire Jake Arrieta? Because the Phillies didn't. And frankly, the acquisition of Aroldis Chapman, which was a blatant statement to the world that domestic violence can be forgiven if a team thinks you can help them win a World Series.
Oh, God. Talk about forgetting about things. Jeez.
That was disgraceful. I think that was, and that remains disgraceful.
Wow. I feel terrible for forgetting about that.
So, you know, and to that point, actually, Theo Epstein even said he was talking about somebody in 1999 while he was still with the Padres. He was talking about somebody who was being celebrated for their position, I think, in like sales. And he said, few people can rise to the top in the field of sales and marketing without once sacrificing one's principles. But that's what makes this guy special and why people in this office rejoice at his success. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. He talked about like being successful without sacrificing your morals. I don't know what his morals are, but clearly, you know, acquiring Chapman was disgraceful for, you know, exactly why we all know it was. So this is kind of my point. Epstein has the difference the Phillies have been missing. They've made moves not unlike his, but the timing hasn't worked out. Literally acquiring Arrieta. Charlie Morton, who got hurt. They tried to build their own Ben Zobrist out of Scott Kingery. That didn't work. You can see them try to reflect the things Epstein has done, but not do it successfully, which is probably the best reason to bring him in, because he can help them build their system. Not an impression of someone else's. Their own. Built by him. The person they've been trying to do an impression of. As everyone has. The Phillies have not been able to do that. So why not, if you can, get the real thing?
It's worth a swing. It's worth a swing to see if he'll do it. I mean, what else? Anything is on the table. Anything and everything.
Well, let me ask you this then. If we're both kind of like talked into the idea of having him, and the Phillies have to wait a full year to get him, and Ned Rice sits in that office, and they don't really do anything, and COVID remains an issue at times, and they don't really compete, and Bryce Harper gets a year older, and Aaron Nola gets a year older, and Zach Wheeler gets a year older, and the farm system maybe develops a little bit on its own, but not a whole lot of work goes into it. And then they hire Theo Epstein. Does that make it all worth it? Does that all get forgiven? Or are you like, we wasted way too much time?
I don't know, honestly. Because you look at where they are in the rebuild, quote unquote, how much more they still have to do. There's a lot of time that's already been wasted.
Yeah.
I mean, and in a way, like, let's hit the ground running. Let's go. But, I mean, another year, I don't know. Like, it will, if they can't get him this year, part of me wants to say, then we're moving on. Then we're not waiting. You know, we need to figure out something else to do. If we have no backup plan to Theo Epstein, then we deserve to fail. Honestly.
Yeah. And I mean, you've seen what it's like when they just bring in imitators. They obviously didn't make great picks the first time. And those guys trying to do their Theo Epstein impressions, it just didn't work. I mean, the truth is, on an Epstein team, missing the playoffs for one season puts a metric ton of pressure on the next one, because that's where he sets expectations for people. On an Epstein team, ownership involvement has to be minimal. On an Epstein team, players like Aroldis Chapman can get a pass for being talented. And on an Epstein team, an uncanny level of not just evaluation, but timing is used as an advantage. And I don't know how you get the good parts of that without having Theo Epstein, but I don't think you can afford necessarily to wait for him. I mean, he's announced he's stepping down from his position with the Cubs as president of baseball ops, due at least in part to what I believe is assumed to be, like you said, spending constraints set forth by ownership due to COVID. Assuming he takes that full year off, you know, I don't think they can wait for that. And hiring him at that point would do a lot to repair the wasted time. But you also can't go back, you know, like the time is spent. So let's just say, again, this is off on a far distant theoretical horizon. Epstein comes to Philly without taking his year off. How far from being an Epstein team are the Phillies right now. I mean, he's looking for, his focus has always been high OPS guys, guys who walk a lot. The Phillies had the seventh highest OPS in baseball in 2020, and they were tied for eighth in walks with Epstein's Cubs. You can forget pretty quick, not that the bullpen was a problem, but that the offense was not really
a huge problem.
So you're kind of looking more at how does Epstein fix a bullpen?
Yeah.
And I mean, at that point, you're kind of wondering, do we really need Theo Epstein to fix a bullpen? That seems like an overcorrection.
Yeah.
But this team overcorrects a lot.
Yes, they do.
So I don't know. I mean, would that be almost a waste of his talents?
I mean, maybe, but I'd love to fuck around to find out.
All right. Well, this is the main thing. This is what we're finishing on here. The other thing to consider is that, yeah, the Phillies can want Epstein. We can consider how likely it is he comes here or just want him to come here. All we want. But the truth is he has to want to come here. And I don't think he does.
No.
I don't think it's impossible. But given the context of his latest decision, having a wife and two sons, his charity work, his desire to read more, according to Joe Posnanski, what he's already accomplished, fixing another franchise in another cold, big market city with rabid fans and impatient spectators starts to sound a little small potatoes for a guy like Epstein. He said himself, I need a new challenge. And, you know, maybe he means a new team, but probably he doesn't. And frankly, even if he did meet another team, the Mets seem like a more appealing option anyway, if he were to consider a baseball ops job. Who knows how things look in a year, but Posnanski assures us that Epstein loves baseball. He's very romantic about baseball and has ambitious ideas about its future. And I think it's way more likely he winds up in like the league office as the ambassador for like next gen baseball connections or whatever, because baseball sucks in that regard. It sucks. Bob Nightingale said Epstein has said he would, quote, love an ownership role. And he even said it in his farewell letter, I do plan on having a third chapter leading a baseball organization someday, though I do not expect it to be next year. So at this point, do you think Epstein even comes in for a baseball ops job, or is he just beyond that?
I have no idea. If he wants an ownership job, God, why? How is that a challenge? How is that a challenge? You're moving money. Like, the jobs that you've had are the jobs that you want. Every job he's had is the job that you want. And if he's done with that, then maybe he should leave baseball and go somewhere else. Like, if he just wants to be an owner and move money around and figure out, you know, how many t-shirts you have to sell to re-sign JT Realmuto, like, then I guess sure. Like, it's not my business to tell him, hey, that's a stupid thing to do. That's a waste of your talent and time, and it's vain and dumb. You know, it's not my place to tell him those things. I want to, but he doesn't listen to this, so then I won't.
Okay, but I'm going to press you on that a little bit, though. Like, if baseball ops, I mean, like, I think he, whatever he does, I think you're right, that he's going to pick the right job for him. And clearly he's been successful at everything he's done in baseball. And he said, like, look, I want another, it sounded like he's, I want a third chapter in baseball at some point. But, you know, I don't know if, and we can say this without knowing him, based on what we've seen, read, and what others have written about him who are more plugged in than us, it just doesn't seem like a Phillies baseball ops job fits that description of what he thinks he wants to do next.
It does not. No.
So what do the Phillies, what do the Phillies do? I mean, I honestly didn't even intend to bring up the idea that maybe they don't need a Theo Epstein, even though they could really benefit from somebody who focuses on infrastructure. He's not the only person who can fix that. But they would need someone who is doing more than just trying to pretend to be Theo Epstein. Because they don't have necessarily a situation that needs a complete overhaul. The timing, and this has been the case for the Phillies in a lot of ways, timing just doesn't seem to be working out.
Nope. No, it's a shame. I guess that's kind of all we could say about it. It's a shame. I would love to see what Epstein, excuse me, could do with a team like this, but I don't think he wants to know.
I feel like it would have been great if he had been available, you know, in 20, whenever we agree this rebuild actually started taking place. It would have been great to see him install some kind of, you know, the strength in the farm system and watch those years at the early parts of the sucky years be a lot, be more productive, you know? Because that's what, when we would get excited about those teams and those like goofy, like, oh, remember how this guy used to play on those teams and they were so crappy. And when you were able to farm some enjoyment out of how like bad the team was and, you know, just understanding that they were going through some bad years and everything, like just knowing that it was all for a reason. I mean, look at the Sixers. They have a ton of insane zealots through Trust the Process because they were like, look, we're doing this, but we're doing it for a reason. And one day it's going to result in this team being one of the good teams and not just this historically bad one. And in the Phillies case, you know, I think you could have achieved that. You would have lost people, but you lost people anyway. You lost people doing it the way you did it. So I feel like this is, in some cases, it feels like the areas where the Phillies are struggling, they need a full reset, but they're not struggling in every area. I guess that's my point.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to take a special person to fill this job and do it well. I hope they could find that person. I hope they're out there, because if that person doesn't exist, that's a problem for the Phillies.
Yeah. And I think you just definitely can't rely on Theo Epstein. If the Phillies' plan right now is, we'll wait a year and hire Theo Epstein, it's gonna be a lot of clenched jaws.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Throughout that process, we'll know, because they just don't hire anybody. They're not going to say, well, we're going to wait to see if Theo wants it. You know, the problem is if they wait and he doesn't want to do it and he doesn't take the job.
Yeah. What if that happens?
That's a dagger. That's a dagger in the whole thing.
I could see that.
Yeah, me too. That's why he either has to give up, you know, say, I guess I won't. I won't spend time with my family. You know, say, I'm going to take this job now. It's either that or nothing, because I don't want to find out if he wants to take the job in a year, because the answer could be no.
Yeah. Well, whoever it is, I'm excited to see what they come in and do. I'll be honest, like a lot of the names that we saw didn't necessarily excite me. I think this is a difficult thing to get excited about. You know, I think a lot of people got really psyched about the idea of Eric Neander just because the Rays are like the team of the moment as far as building talent goes and everything. But I don't know. It's tough to get excited about front office stuff because so few people can find sustained success. I feel like it's rare. What we get excited about when it comes to stuff like Theo Epstein is because you just don't see that everywhere. So I get the excitement. I don't think it's likely. I hope the Phillies hire someone soon. The sooner they do, the more easily it'll be to take them seriously. But until then, I don't think he can.
No.
And I don't think a lot of people are.
No, no one's taking them seriously. And that's what they deserve.
Yeah. Well, that'll do it for this episode of Continued Success. I am Justin Clue. You can follow me on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Follow Liz at Liz Rocher and see her work at Yahoo Sports. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, this podcast, Continued Success with me and Liz, The Dirty Inning with me and Dr. Trevor Strunk. We'll have a new episode of that next week. And our Patreon, patreon.com/hittenseason, where there'll be a new episode of Absolutely Hammered with me and Chris Jones, another movie review from me and Liz, and whatever content we feel like putting up there for $5 a month. It's well worth it. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Continued Success.